Welcome. My name is Susan Daffron, and I'm the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. So thanks for listening. Today we're talking to Jerry Waxler about writer's block. The title of this talk today is I Don't Break for Writer's Block, Effective Techniques to Stay in High Gear. And Jerry is an expert in this topic. He conducts self-help workshops for writers and has collected his strategies in the book Four Elements for Writers, How to Get Beyond Yes But, Conquer Self-Doubt and Inertia, and Achieve Your Writing Goals. He has a master's degree in counseling psychology from Villanova University, is vice president of the Philadelphia Writers Conference, and is on the advisors panel of the National Association of Memoir Writers. The book and Jerry's blog for memoir readers and writers is available from www.jerrywaxler.com. So if you want to find out more about Jerry, you can visit that website. So welcome and thanks for joining us, Jerry. It's great to have you here.
My pleasure.
So so let's talk writer's block.
Okay. Okay. I thought long and hard about a title because the writer's block always makes me nervous. I hate to talk about the obstacle. I'd rather talk about the momentum. So I thought I Don't Break for Writer's Block kind of summarizes it. Kind of get in high gear, stay energetic, and keep your writing momentum moving forward. So those are all things that all writers want, and actually many entrepreneurs and artists want too. But I've geared my material towards writers. I love the whole project of writing. I think it's really fascinating trying to get inside your own head and develop material that other people can appreciate. And while all of our writing depends on good writing, depends on effective writing and communication and so on, one of the things that we tend to ignore until we have problems with it is the fact that a good writer needs strategies in order to get to the desk. And so, naturally, I've heard this from many writers over the years, that they don't have time, there's other priorities, they're not in the mood, and so on. And I, in my fascination with this project, especially in the sense that I've also had to face those issues myself, I started.
Haven't
to
we
study,
all?
Right. So I studied self-help back in quite a few years ago. I started getting into self-help literature to see if I could find some tools in order to overcome these obstacles. And I studied quite a number of books, 50 to 100 books on my bookshelf in the self-help arena, and realized that overall there's just a whole pile of strategies that come in handy. But I think most people who've gotten into the self-help field realize that it's difficult to know what to apply and when. So what I've done for my workshops and then for the book that I put together from the workshops is to break down these self-help strategies into four types or elements, as I call them. So I, in one of my incarnations, have studied the tarot, and I love the image of earth, air, fire, and water. So I separated out the self-help strategies into four units that would correspond with those four elements. That's why I call it Four Elements for Writers.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic thing that I want to do before I launch into, and I'd like to give an overview of each one of those.
Okay.
What I want to do today first, before I even start with any strategy, is just to be really clear about the importance of self-help strategies in general. Because as writers, we're kind of self-managers. We're the boss and the worker. And we have to be good bosses to ourselves. And there's not necessarily a whole lot of training. I think the really effective writers are people that know how to do that well. So a lot of times you'll hear writers say it's not so much the quality of the writing, because there's a lot of good writing around. It's more important that you stick to it and that you can keep going and bring your energy to the project. Mm-hmm. So it's that self-management aspect that I want to encourage everyone to engage in and to look at with an inquiring mind, to treat all of these problems as solvable problems. So that's my introduction. I'm going to get into the four elements. First, I'll tell what they are, overview, and then get into each one with a couple suggestions, news you can use, things you can try to help keep you moving.
Well, it kind of sounds like, too, that, I mean, the first thing would be identifying, you know, as we go through the four steps, which ones are really going to, which ones really resonate with you, because, you know, I think that people don't realize that writer's block, it's not the same every time. Sometimes what's blocking you is, you know, it could be a different one of those four elements. It's not always the same thing. Sometimes it depends on the project. Sometimes it depends on other things that are going on in your life, which one of these might apply.
Right. That's so true. I mean, not only do the different blocks appear differently, but different people have different affinities for different styles of self-help.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think it's really important to kind of get the whole gamut and
yeah.
get a kind of a sense of the tools that you can use. So it's true. Each of these applies, and I think as I go through, you'll see how they can apply in different situations and maybe at different times of your life even.
Mm-hmm.
So considering that most writers want to write, it's not that we come to a project and say, I want to write for the next month and then I'm done. I think most of us want to really consider this as an important part of our lives for the rest of our lives. I know that's the case for me, and most of the people that I talk to that want to write really don't have any particular reason to ever stop. They want to get started and keep going. So over the period of years, as they roll into the future, there'll be different obstacles and there'll be different strategies to help overcome those obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good point, is to kind of, that's the way I approach this, is to really to get a more of a familiarity with the different kinds of approaches and the different kinds of energetic attitudes and activities that you can engage in to keep you momentum, to keep your momentum going. So did you have a particular so in an interactive class, I like to ask for different types of obstacles. And
well, I can tell you that, I mean, before the call, I mentioned that I'm actually working on a project that I'm actually kind of stuck on, which is really unusual because, I mean, I've normally have no problem with writing. I've written 10 books. I mean, it's obviously I can produce stuff, but I'm working on a really big project right now. And I find myself really just dragging on it.
Okay. So let me say before, that's great, and before I even start the four approaches, let me say a couple things about procrastination in general. It's a pretty powerful word, and I just want to take a couple minutes to look at it. A lot of times so I like to think of energy and just moving forward and blasting through and writing every day and all the good things that come with a real writer's life. But there is this thing called procrastination where you feel like you're bumping up against a wall. So let me just say a couple things about that, and then I'll get into my four elements. Procrastination, when you really break it down and look at the feelings and the phenomenon, something in your mind is becoming, I look at it as an anxiety, that you're becoming overwhelmed. And there's a couple things that overwhelm us about our tasks. One is the attitude that this is a huge task, that it's too big for who we are, and so we intimidate ourselves. The other is that we're too small, or we're not bringing enough energy to it, or we're distracted, or so on. So there's a kind of a balance between the size of your energy and the size of the task. So one way to bring procrastination under control is to reduce in your own mind how big the task is. Say, chunk it down, take little bite-sized chunks.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is to increase your sense of momentum and courage. And I'll talk about that as in my elements, but is if you can increase your energy and momentum and say, I'm bigger than this problem, in any way you can convince yourself, that's another thing that can help reduce that anxiety and reduce the block. And the third thing is that little strange little thing that happens when you just get started. You just pick off one little corner of it. You just write down a couple notes, write in your journal, I can't get started, but this is what I would do if I could start. Or some little trick that you can play on yourself, because action begets more action. And as you get going, it's kind of like priming a pump. It's almost like jumping into a cold swimming pool. Once you're in, it's not such a big deal. So those are three different approaches to procrastination. But you'll see as I go through these elements that all of them apply in different ways, and I'll come back to that as we go through, because I think when people talk about writer's blocks, a lot of times that is another way to say procrastination. So,
I think it's really interesting what you're saying too about the size, you know, being able to balance the amount of energy you have with the size of the task, because I think what's happening with me is that I, you know, for various other reasons, I've had kind of a low energy, and so I look at this and it just seems like this giant, overwhelming thing, and I definitely know the thing about just getting started. I mean, that's how I've written most of my books. It's like, oh no, I have a deadline, so I'd better get started. There's nothing like, right, the, you know, a little motivation, but I think that, you know, maybe my low energy is actually coming into play and increasing that that momentum that you're talking about and the courage, and maybe there's some fear tied up into even finishing this project, because I know sometimes writers worry about, oh my gosh, if I finish this, then I'm going to have to put it out there, and,
right,
and you know, you end up tied up in fear of rejection and what happens next and things,
yep,
like that. Yep. So it's really an interesting way to put it, to that energy balance.
Yeah. So it's multifaceted, and that's what I think, you know, the key to all of this is to look at it. It's like, okay, bunch of problems. I know some good things. I remember some of these things that I'm going to talk about today I got from my grandmother when I was a kid. So, you know, there's different sources, and we know a lot of things, bringing them to bear when we need them. Sometimes it helps just to talk it through and sort of remind yourself that, oh, yes, that's right, I could do this. So all these things are good. And that's why we have talks like we're having today, just to kind of remind you and other listeners what kinds of tools are available. So even if you know them, it's good to refresh our familiarity with them. So let me go through this categorizing into elements, and I'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about, and then I'll go through each one. So for earth, air, fire, and water, earth is action, so like it's tilling the soil. Obviously, it's very confusing to be a writer, because you know that the work is going on inside your mind. It's actually very fun. I love that about writing, is that the real creativity is something that just emanates from your mind. I mean, that's a really neat feeling, but it also has to come out into the physical world by you sitting down and actually getting it on paper and then going through and editing and so on. So there's some physical action involved, and we can't really get around that. And so part of the problem of doing it is actually doing it. And that means, So first of all, just to know that there's such a thing as action being, you know, separate from all these whole other attitudinal things. Action means getting to your desk, and I have a couple suggestions. One of the easiest things, once you get it going, is if you get into a regular habit where you're going to write every day. Like if you're going to practice the piano, you kind of understand that it has to be a regular thing. And I know I've heard pushback from people, I don't really write well when I do it every day and so on. All of that is individual choice. But if you can get it dialed in to where it's there for you every day, it becomes something where you'd miss it if it was gone. Another thing about action is that it has to take place in time. So a lot of times we think about time management. Where do I fit all of my priorities in? You know, it's very businessy. You think about if you go to your day job or you're trying to do some accounting or whatever, you have to use priorities and to-do lists, and you just maybe might resist doing that around your writing because writing seems more creative, more organic. You want to just do it somehow. But I encourage you to consider your writing as part of your to-do. I mean, you really need to just kind of squeeze it into your schedule somehow. And again, these sound like simple suggestions, but there's a whole field of thought around priorities and scheduling and so on. And I just encourage people to avail themselves of the kinds of thinking that would get them to organize their day around their writing. There's one other piece of the action element, which I find is really fun and interesting, especially if you're in like a block kind of a mode. You say, okay, I've got to my desk, but I'm just looking at that computer and I don't really want to do anything. So sometimes there's other types of physical action that you can take. Like, for example, doodling is a wonderful way to scribble down a little drawing. You get into a visual arts kind of a mode where you're looking at a picture of what you're going to write. Another way to get yourself into your writing head is to maybe do some role playing, whether it's with another person or by yourself, to say, okay, well, how would I explain this to an audience? And the audience is going to come a little later, but the whole idea of speaking something out loud, if you're going to sort of talk through what you're trying to write, that's another way to use a different mode of action in order to get your brain engaged. So if your procrastination is around sitting there moving your fingers because that's what you are doing with your typing, try doing something different. So those few things in a nutshell, I could easily talk for a whole hour about more things to do with action, how to get started with habits. There's actually a whole science around habits that you can get into, the steps of creating a habit and so on. But just for the sake of today, as I'm trying to categorize these four elements, that's the action element. And I'd like to go on to the other three elements. Susan, if you have any thoughts about that or you want to add anything about the action part of your block.
Well,
I think
getting into the habit of writing is something that is difficult for a lot of people, and I know that the way I did it was first, when I was first starting, I wouldn't do anything unless I had a deadline. So what I did was I went to the local newspaper and said, I want to write columns for free. And they didn't pay me, but they gave me a deadline because I found that, and then that got me into the habit of writing every week. And I live in a really small town with a really crummy newspaper, so they were desperate for anybody who, mildly literate. So it was pretty great news for them, and it worked out well for me. And I got into the habit of writing at least something every week. And so even if you're not writing every day, even if you're just writing once a week, still getting into that habit, it just sort of like trains your brain almost and gets you past that starting point that you were talking about, is that a lot of times people get stuck just at the idea of starting. And so,
right.
But if you have a deadline, then you kind of have to blast through that, or you're going to have, you know, peer pressure of someone saying,
yeah,
you know, you didn't turn in your column, and I'm mad now. But I mean, that's one thing that I've actually suggested to a lot of people who have terrible, terrible procrastination problems is go find a, you know, the local freebie rag in your town that has, you know, has no good content, and give them some.
Right. Well, there's another thing that that's going on there, and I just said there's four. I have like a whole system here, but the other thing that's going on in that, when you went to your local newspaper, you were turning your writing from a private act to a public one.
Exactly.
And so it's more than just the deadline, because if it's not like the deadline and then you're going to put it in the drawer, it's a deadline and then you're going to give it to somebody. So there's a kind of a double thing, a double tool there, where if you can look at your audience, and that's my fourth element. I don't want to give away any secrets or anything, but that's terrific. I think that's wonderful to find an audience, whether it's a deadline of a newspaper or a deadline of your critique group or
deadline. That's another great one, yeah.
Yeah, so anything you can do to write for people is an excellent thing, or if you have a writing buddy or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the second element, so we have action, first element. Second element is attitude, and that means how do you feel about yourself and your writing when you're sitting at your desk or when you're thinking about what you're going to write next. There are all kinds of important things going on in your mind. Now, a lot of the big, big sort of famous thing, and see it in a lot of workshop-type experiences, is the internal critic. And that's a very specific aspect of this attitude. You could say, I don't like that sentence, I'm going to rewrite it, or, oh, I'm a terrible writer. There's a lot of different ways that we can undermine ourselves with our attitude or accentuate our energy with our attitude. It's more accessible than you think. There's a whole field called cognitive therapy, and that's a fancy word for the fact that what you think affects the way you feel. So when you're looking for self-help techniques, when you're looking for ways to push yourself into your project and stay there, and have that thirst for success and have that willingness to sit and write, is to be careful and aware of the kinds of thinking that you're doing that may be either undermining you or promoting your efforts. So some of the things that we talk about in this whole concept of attitude is, be careful about self-criticisms. And if you see one coming along, you can flip it around and become much more positive. So if you're saying, I can't do this, or I want, or this is too big, or this is intimidating, that's a statement that you're making to yourself. It doesn't mean that it's true. It just means that your mind is dishing up a thought that sounds undermining. And if you're in the habit of just accepting that thought, then you're kind of at its mercy. But there's no rule that says you can't consciously insert the thought, I can do this, or this is going to work, or I know I can do this. So there's two components to this. One is to talk back to your negative self-talk. So you can take control. I mean, there's a whole thing about assertiveness. You wouldn't let your friend say, you know, you wouldn't expect your friend to say, you can't do that. That's you're not good enough to do that. So why would you allow yourself to say it to yourself? And so there's this whole component of becoming aware of what you're saying to yourself. There's other parts to this attitude piece, and that is simply being upbeat, being hopeful. So a lot of times we think we're at the mercy of these feelings, but if you really want to succeed, you really want your writing to work, you know, bring your A game to it. Say, I'm really going to do this. This is my best hour of the day. I'm really going to pour myself into this, and this can work. This is important to me. So that is a quick summary, and obviously there's lots of work that you can do on that, and there's pieces I go through specific exercises in my workbook about, and if we had more time, of specific inner objections. So it's one thing to say, you know, though that darn internal critic doesn't hold any power over me. And that's one excellent approach. There's other things that sound more convincing, like, well, I don't really have the background to do this. Who am I to do this? And you can refute those statements as meaningless because you really do have the kind of background. Susan, you said you wrote 10 books, and that's proof that you can do it. So you can, if you've done it before, you can do it again. So you're always looking for the rational arguments. Your mind automatically comes up with all these fancy-sounding, convincing reasons why it's not going to work. And you want to consciously apply your thinking to explain to yourself why it is going to work. It's just a question of taking control over that process and doing yourself the favor of looking at the positive aspect of this whole project.
Well, I think that's interesting, you know, interesting that one thing you find, too, is that sometimes, I guess you would say, other elements of your day will sort of infect your writing. So, you know, you had a bad day and there was a huge traffic jam, and then, you know, you're sort of mad at the world, and then that takes you sort of down a negative spiral, and it affects your writing, where you're not paying attention to your thoughts because you're feeling negative about other things that are going on in your life, or your teenager screamed at you or whatever. And, you know, it's really hard to get back to that happy place where you can do good writing. One thing that I've read about that you're probably familiar with is when you have really negative thoughts, is to actually do what they call, you know, inquiry on it, where, you know, if you're familiar with Byron Katie and the work and the four questions, where you basically ask, you know, is this thought true? Is it really true? And then how do you know it's true? And how would you feel if it weren't true? And just starting to really analyze what you're thinking, and really, I mean, part of it, it just makes you pay attention to what you're thinking, because a lot of people, like you were saying, will just accept these thoughts that they're having as gospel, like, you know, oh, my writing is crummy, and it's not really true. And just that act of looking at it and going, you know, is it really true, or am I just, you know, this is how I feel today because I was in the terrible traffic jam and my teenager screamed at me.
Right. Well, what you're doing is exactly what we're talking about. You're taking a toolkit. You've got a self-help line of thinking. You're looking at that toolkit and you're applying it to this whole project where you want to write. You've got a goal, and you know that you're the manager. You have to get yourself into this state of mind. It's a solvable problem. What tools do I have at my disposal? Oh, I have those tools. So you apply tools to your thinking, to your actions, and then the two more that I'll talk about. And you're going to apply all of your tools to bring to bear on your writing project. So I guess part of this has to do with the fact that all the things that we hear about, you know, my grandmother saying this too will pass or whatever, you know, she has great sense of affirmations, and not that she was an expert, but just that's just the way she got herself through the day.
Mm-hmm.
And those tools can really help you as you get to your writing and say, okay, well, this is, you know, creating this safe space. So when you the action part brings you to the desk, and what we're talking about now is at the desk, keep a clear emotional space as well.
Yeah.
And just as an aside, and this isn't for everybody, I understand we all have our own best times of day and so on. My writing habit is first thing in the morning, so I don't have those. I have a really wonderful relationship with a clear mental space first thing in the morning, so I don't have the traffic jams and so on there.
That's probably a good time to do it if you're a morning person.
Right. Well, time of day is a big thing, and that's also part of this element number one, you know, picking that time that works for you and so on. So let me get to the third element. And you'll see that at each one that I kind of add to the puzzle, because they all add up. They're all sort of intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
So the earth, air, fire. Fire is like the torch that you would carry to lead you through the night kind of thing. Or maybe it's the sunrise, the daily pace of the sun or whatever. But the point about the fire is the aspiration or the ambition, the piece of this whole thing that is driving you towards your goal. So one of the things that I like to do with this whole element is to look at your writing project as if it's a story. So you're the protagonist of the story. You're desired, like any protagonist, you have a desire to reach a goal. And then you encounter obstacles. So how are you going to insert yourself into this role and become a more energetic person to achieve your own goal? And there's this whole system around that. It's like if you can think of yourself and your story. So one of the things, speaking of tools that we pick up from various sources, Stephen Covey, in one of my favorite self-help books, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, talks about a mission statement. So he's asking you to look forward towards what you want to accomplish and how that's going to fit in with your values and so on. And so that is the kind of beginnings of a story that you're going to tell about your future, or how this whole project is going to unfold. And every project that you undertake does have some kind of desire in it. It has some kind of desire to reach a goal. So, for example, Susan, you talked about that you had a long-term desire to become a writer, and you translated that into a shorter-term desire to complete this week's column for your newspaper. So you had a goal, and you set out, and to overcome those obstacles, you took your long-term goal and you brought it into the present, and you said, this is what I'm going to do to go forward. So all the things that we do as writers are steps along a path towards our own success. So I know there's a lot that is written about the whole self-help strategy of looking at your own story, and that's, again, very effective when you get into the habit of seeing yourself as a writer who is going to achieve a goal. Now, one of the things that I like to do in this, in workshops, when we have more time to process on the individual component, is what is your image of being a writer? So if your protagonist in the story of your life is that you're a writer, what is your image of that, and how can you really bring some energetic imagery to help you move forward with that goal, with that, put yourself into a role that really energizes you? And a lot of times we have a very static or sedentary view of what a writer is. I mean, if you look at a writer anytime, you know, you look at a writer for 24 hours, unless they're up taking a bio break, you know, they're sitting there at a desk, not doing much, you know, moving their fingers. It's a very, it's not a very energetic visual thing to see. But if you pick a metaphor for yourself that has more intensity, more momentum, so whether it's a warrior or an actor or a healer or a communicator, maybe you're a messenger, but whatever it is as a writer that you feel that you're accomplishing, if you put yourself into that role, maybe more playfully, that you can accept some image of yourself that is more lofty, more, you know, ethereal, anything that you want about yourself that can make writing become more fun, more stimulating than just that static image. A writer, maybe you have a writer as an image of a middle-aged college professor at a party with a cocktail in his hand. It's like, well, that might not be very inviting, you know. So you don't need to look at a writer in this sort of static, limited way, but look at it in a metaphorical way, so that you can take that drama and play in it. So this whole third element is a little more abstract. I get a little tongue-tied around the story of the self because it's not quite, you know, as writers, we're also writing stories, but we're also living a story. And one of the things that I do that I really get excited about is the hero's journey, where we can look at ourselves as heroes of our own story and try to understand what characteristics heroes bring to bear in their stories, whether it's courage or persistence or willingness to ignore hardship or inconvenience. Heroes have a bad rap because there are a lot of times they're thought of as loners, but in pretty much all the hero stories, all the mythology, heroes attract chosen communities. There's a group of people around a hero. There's allies and mentors and partners and all the kinds of people that a hero travels with. So you can do all of those parts of your journey with a lot more vigor and interest than you typically think of when you just sit down and write at a desk. It's not necessarily as inviting as if you generate a sense of dynamic purpose around your project.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things about this whole story of self and the whole thing about the ambition and so on, is that it does feed into your attitude. So you can improve your attitude by looking at your goals. So if you think of this whole thing as a long journey, and this is only one step of it, it can help you increase your attitude. So all these things kind of tie together. Or for another example, in the procrastination example, if you look at it as just one project that you're trying to complete, it could seem very closed and limited. But if you look at it as one step along a loftier, longer journey up a mountain, it can seem kind of romantic, something that you're really excited about accomplishing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the third element. We've got action, attitude, and then ambition or aspiration, and that also has to do with telling that story about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So can you think of any metaphor that you'd like to, have you thought about that before, or do you have a metaphor that jumps to your mind in terms of what you would see yourself doing?
Well, I think that's really, really interesting as far as, you know, really looking at the big picture. I think that, you know, one of the things that motivated me was using, I always call myself the queen of recycling, because for me, anything I write it's always like a means to an end. So everything that I write, I often repurpose. So there's always kind of a really strategic plan for everything I'm writing all the time. So I definitely see the idea of, you know, having sort of a mission statement for your project and how is it fitting in with everything else you're doing. As far as, you know, how do I visualize myself when I'm writing, I haven't actually thought about that, but that's kind of a good idea because, like you say, sitting at a desk is not exactly, you know, doesn't make you sound like a very exciting hero of your own little writing journey there. It's kind of boring.
Right.
But, you know, I think in my case, the thing I'm working on is actually online training. So, and it's a whole bunch of courses. So it's, you know, in my case, it's sort of a mission to get the word out. So I guess, you know, a teacher is a little more active. You know, even an actor is sort of more interesting than just sort of sitting there as a writer. Warrior didn't kind of do it for me. Messenger, maybe. That's kind of, you know, the messenger of truth about publishing. I don't know.
Well, teacher's good, and I'm going to get to that in number four, being audience, because there's a whole bunch of things going on with what your goals are with respect to your audience. So a writer is actually a teacher in lots of ways. There's a potentially, you know, it's really fascinating because it potentially hundreds or thousands of people on the other end of this. It's just that we can't see them. So the visualization exercise is to help you kind of plug into that. And it's like as long as you keep your head down and your thoughts limited to just this little person at a desk, I mean, that may be comforting and may actually be fine for you. But if you want to play around with the image of teacher, then it potentially expansive and takes you out of your smaller world into a larger one. The other thing that you mentioned is a strategy, and that's really fun. It's just terrific that you have this longer-term goal. I'm just inviting you to consider that the word strategy sounds, you know, business-like or warfare-like, and you might have just a lot more fun with it and turn it into a more creative sense about what you're trying to achieve if you write it into a more metaphorical kind of characterization.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, not to say there's anything wrong or limited in any way about the fact that you have a strategy, you might have a lot more fun as you see your story unfolding in the future and you being the character that's doing all of this. I mean, it's, you're doing a tremendous thing by creating all these different parts of your project. And as long as you see them in a business way, it's a little bit more isolated and mechanical. If you see it in a more of a dramatic sort of human community way, you might be able to give yourself a little bit of a energy boost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's probably a good point. And because I tend to be much more of a nonfiction writer than some people, and I know that, like, my sister is a fiction writer, and when she gets stuck, sometimes she feels like she needs to go toward nonfiction. You know, sometimes you have to, you know, if you sort of have too much drama going on, it's like, again, it can be an element of balance, I think, where sometimes you're, I don't know, maybe it's different areas of your brain. You need to step back from the wildly creative to the really concrete, and then switch back to going into more drama if you're too much in the, you know, my company name is Logical Expression, so I always think of it as you know, the logical side versus the expressive side.
And oh, interesting. Okay.
It's like, you know, so going back and forth between these two extremes, and I think that sometimes, you know, it helps to to think about that balance, and because I know that for myself, sometimes different types of writing, I can get sort of exhausted from, and I'll want to like return to the comfort of, say, nonfiction writing. Like I find writing things like sales copy and copywriting, you know, for product copy and things like that is just another type of writing, but it's one that I find uses sort of different mental muscles, and I find it very difficult to do it, to do long stretches of that. So it can be helpful to, you know, I think go back and forth, and even if you're just doing it mentally and not necessarily even writing anything, but just mentally thinking about a different metaphor for some of your different projects and how you feel about it.
Remember, and it gets a little abstract, but remember I'm talking about the story of who you are in this. So you can be a very logical person planning your next fiction book or your next thriller, or you can be a very dramatic person planning your next three nonfiction books. So it has. So I'm kind of stepping back and looking at you as an actor on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you bring a great point about the logic and the drama. If we've been watching Sherlock Holmes, we stumbled on a series of Sherlock Holmes made for television, and he's just incredibly logical, and yet the dramas are filled with intense emotion. So the two things definitely mix in lots of ways, and there's certainly nothing about one that precludes the other, you know, as long as you get into the mix. So let me move on to element number four, especially last but not least. It's kind of the most fun, and I don't want to run out of time, is the water, earth, air, fire, and water. Water is a symbol for love, and it's kind of perfect because in the case of a writer, we're looking to connect with our audience, and the audience can, if we look at our audience, our readers with love, that can add an enormous amount of energy to the writing project. So one of the things that, of course, would lead to procrastination is a fear that your audience is judgmental or that you're afraid of your audience. So writers, a lot of times it's said that writers are private people and that we'd rather be alone in our room, but the fact is that if we ever want readers, we're actually reaching out towards people. So those are two potentially contradictory parts of our lives. And I think it's up to us as writers to do some work to integrate those two parts of our two potentially opposing parts of what we're trying to accomplish. And one of the things, so I have a whole bunch of things that I do in order to connect my writing with my audience, and that, as you mentioned, a great example is to write an article for a column for your local newspaper. Another thing is to join writing groups. Anytime you're writing with people, you're doing a lot of work towards translating, towards moving from an isolated activity to a social one. And anything you can do to write for readers is going to remind you in a variety of ways that that's what you're doing, is communicating. So that's one of the reasons that I blog. I blog pretty much every week. I've been doing it for close to 4 years. And I'm figuring I have a couple hundred thousand words on my blog, and it's all been read by people, which is really fun. I mean, I get to play around with words, but of course I structure them and organize them, and then I get readers, I get some feedback. My blog is about memoir writing and reading, but anything that you want to do to develop your audience can be done on the internet, and blogs are just one way to do it, but the point is to move from isolation into communication. Another thing that I try to take very seriously is praise, because we have these strange automatic filters where we think that the one criticism out of 1,000 people, that one criticism really sticks in our mind. It's like, oh my God, I've done a horrible job. And we can turn that around and say, well, what if there were 1,000 people and one of them praised us? Why wouldn't that have the same impact? So if you turn towards praise and accept it and really process on it, and I think a lot of times people tend to sort of brush off praise and say, oh, they didn't really mean it or whatever. Well, why take praise any less seriously than criticism? So there's a lot of conscious choice that can be made about how you look at your audience. You know, instead of looking at them as judges, look at them as the people that you really want to communicate with. These are the people that are making this whole thing worthwhile. By being on the receiving end of your writing, they're your greatest allies. So all of these components of this fourth element are crucial for writers, and in all cases, they feed back into the attitude. They certainly feed back into the ambition, because if your end goal is to be a writer, you certainly want to have a sensible and enthusiastic as possible connection with your audience. So there's all kinds of interactions among these four, and I don't want to limit this to any one system. You mentioned, Susan, a whole system about reviewing your thoughts, and there are many others. And all of these things, the positive thinking about your readers, feeds into the things I was talking about with the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And mission statements relate to the way you look at your ambition and so on. So I hope I've expanded your toolkit and or offered you different ways of looking at things, and above all, to look in general at the whole problem of your writing project as, on one hand, being a good writer, and on the other hand, being a good manager, getting yourself to write.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, what you started off with was that you have to be a manager and the employee at the same time, and it's like, you know, sometimes you think that the boss should just fire this employee because the employee is not doing its job.
Well, or you know, a lot of times they say, okay, well, maybe the manager's not doing
a cruddy supervisor I have.
Exactly.
But I think it's interesting, too, when you're talking about the audience. In fact, I thought of this. I haven't actually done it per se, but a good idea, I think, is to, like you say, people tend to be much more reluctant to remember the praise, and they only remember the, you know, the nasty flame blog comment. They don't remember all the 25 great comments that came before.
Yeah.
But to actually save them in a in like a fan mail file or something, and
yeah,
and then go back when you're feeling really down to go look at the all the nice things that people have said over
yeah.
time about your writing, and there's something to be said for having that
right
saved aside somewhere. I actually sort of accidentally did it with our websites. We had websites kind of before there were blogs, but we didn't really have comments. We had comment forms. So I ended up saving all these emails that I got about my articles over the years, and my husband's a programmer, and he had this bright idea that we could create a little testimonial rotator.
Nice.
So I thought, well, I've got all these comments from years and years of people writing in saying thank you for these articles. And I didn't really realize it because, like you say, you tend to not focus on the positive stuff. But when I went through and compiled all these testimonials, I think it worked out to be like 478 testimonials saying, wow, this article really helped me. So
right.
I now have this thing, you know, this little file, which is actually sort of a little database, actually, because my husband's a nerd. What can I tell you? And but it's a really nice thing to realize that there was 478 people who bothered to write in, and I think that that's a really valuable thing for me to have, and and something that really everybody should set aside if, you know, if you if you're at a writing group or whatever, and the woman sitting next to you says, "Oh my gosh, that was a fantastic sentence," you know, go home and write it in your journal, and just remember that on August 12th, you know, Betty sitting next to me said that I wrote, you know, a really powerful sentence, and it moved her or something, just so that you can remember those good feelings when you're feeling down.
Yeah, well, a couple things. One is that there is a cultural bias that makes us sort of think we're supposed to forget those things. So it's a very strange thing, and I think it's in our, we have the right to reject that cultural bias and say, no, that was an important statement.
Yeah.
Another thing is there's this number two, my element number two, or attitude. One of the things that can really help are affirmations, like you are a good person, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can say to yourself, you are a good writer. Well, you've got these built-in affirmations where you've accepted, you've kind of collected other people's affirmations of you. So that's a very neat, way to combine you know, your audience with your affirmations rather than sort of
there you go.
The opposite of this internal judge.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, there really are a lot of tools, and there are really are a lot of the things that your mind dishes up to you to try to get you to stop really fall apart when you stop to think about them. So that's the best thing, is to really think about how these strategies can be turned around to benefit you and to help you really get to your desk and feel darn good about it so you can write your best and continue to give the world the gifts that you've already started giving them.
Mm-hmm. So before we close out, can you tell people who are listening where they can find your book, which goes into more detail on all this?
Yes. So I have been giving this workshop for a number of years, and from it I developed a workbook with the four elements and go into a lot of details and some exercises and so on. And right now it's available from my website, www.jerrywaxler.com. That's JerryWaxler.com. And there's a link up at the top for books. I also have a book on how to write memoirs. And this book is Four Elements for Writers. That's also listed there, and I sell it through my website. And there's also a blog. If you're interested in memoir writing, I am very interested in memoir writing and read books about memoirs and write articles about them and so on.
Cool.
So that's that.
Cool. Well, that's great. I know that actually quite a few of our members are either working on memoirs or have published memoirs, and so I'll encourage them to visit your website. But at this point, we are out of time, and I'd like to thank Jerry for taking the time to be here. And like Jerry said, if you want more information and more information or advice on memoir writing, too, you can visit his website at www.jerrywaxler.com. So thank you all for being here.
Okay, and thanks.